The incident that I'm about to narrate happened when I was very new to the city of Dayton. These were the days when GPS was there only in airplanes. People didn't have the global positioning system in their cars and in their hands. And you know that downtown Dayton is not the best place to get lost, especially if you're new to Dayton. Well, I did get lost, and I was determined to find my way back home on my own. I wandered for a good half an hour, and suddenly I realized I had landed up in a part of the city that did not look like the rest of Dayton. For one reason, there were people looking at this rather suspicious ponytailed South Asian wandering about aimlessly. And on the other hand, I'm beginning to get a lot more uncomfortable about where I was. Finally, I decided to call for help, and I told my friends where I was. And they said to me, "Keep your car doors locked. Do not get out to ask for directions." And street by street, they led me back to our beautiful Belmont. Later, I would realize that this is what we call the West Side. You don't go there unless you want to be killed, is what people told me. Many years later, I did a police ride along on that part of town. Those of us who live in Dayton, we get boundaries. We know where to go and where not to go. We decide where to go and not to go. And those of us who understand boundaries will understand today's readings, particularly the gospel reading, rather well. Cultural, racial, religious boundaries existed even at the time of Jesus. Tyre and Sidon, the two cities mentioned in today's gospel reading, were pagan territories. Jews had no reason to enter into pagan territories, and they did not. Jesus, by going to Tyre and Sidon, actually was deliberately crossing the cultural boundaries of his time. The woman, too, crossed cultural boundaries in coming to Jesus. This is a female pagan woman who comes to a male Jew. This is almost a taboo, but she does. She comes to Jesus to seek help. Here's the question, though. Why did Jesus treat the Canaanite woman with such disdain? Jesus says to her, "It is not right to take the food that is kept for children and throw it to dogs." Imagine if someone said that to us. I would say, "Take a walk, dude. Got other things to do." The rest of the Gospels, Jesus is very accommodative of people from other cultures. In this passage, though, he ends up insulting this woman. And the question is why? I read numerous commentaries because people have often asked this question, why did Jesus do this? And honestly, none of the commentaries will give you a clear answer to why Jesus may have said what he said. Couple of speculations. That because Jesus was human, he was playing out the cultural prejudices of his time. Another reason that some scholars will give you is actually Jesus was highlighting the cultural prejudices of his time. What is clear to us, though, is that even after the death and resurrection, this story continued through the oral tradition and came to be written down in at least two of the Gospels. Matthew and Mark include this story in their Gospel. So almost 50, 60 years after, or at least 30 or 40 years after the death of Jesus, this story has been spoken through oral tradition and written down. What does that say? It says that the cultural prejudices that existed when Jesus was alive continued to exist in the communities to which Matthew and Mark were writing. Yes, there were serious differences between Jewish Christians and Gentiles. In fact, the Christian community is split right through the middle because these two groups of people were now becoming Christian. So, by including the story, it's Matthew and Mark's way of saying, listen, we need to acknowledge the differences between us, but we also must acknowledge how Jesus resolved the issue. Jesus resolved the prejudices of his time when he recognized that the woman herself had crossed the boundaries that existed at her time. So Jesus in the Gospel of Mark says to the woman, because of what you said, not because of what I said, because of what you said, your daughter has been healed. Go home. So this story, even though it's a difficult story, is included in the scriptures because we must acknowledge the differences, the prejudices, the resentments that exist in society, yet find a way to resolve it in the way Jesus and this woman do. So today, I have two practical implications, but don't rejoice too much because my third point is a totally different issue. So I will have three points, but two of them are my practical implications for today. Okay, my first point. I want to begin the reading with today's first reading, the first point with today's first reading. Hear what Isaiah says. Observe what is right, do what is just, for my salvation will come to you. Observe what is right, do what is just, and my salvation will come to you. Now, how many of you parents probably tell your children when they ask you, you know, an advice about something, they'll say to you, well, do what the right thing to do is. Have you said that before? Do what the right thing to do is. I know it's hard, do the right thing. And we give this advice to children, to adults, to our friends. In today's gospel reading, isn't it true that the woman comes out looking better than Jesus? It's one of those few passages where the woman comes out looking better than Jesus. Why? Because she did the right thing. She's insulted, but she stays humble. Her faith is questioned, but she's persistent in faith. And because she is humble and persistent in faith, because she did what the right thing to do is, salvation came her way. You and I face week after week situations where we must do the right thing to save somebody's reputation, not to get lost in the competitive world, not to become materialistic, not to give in to the promiscuous culture around, constantly to do the right thing. And folks, the young men who are aspiring to be in Carroll High School's football team, listen, it's one thing to make it to the football team, it's quite another to be known for doing what is right. In school, there will be situations where you'll be challenged to do the easy thing, the wrong thing, do the right thing. And what is God's promise? If you do what is right, observe what is just, my salvation will come to you. The woman believed that. She said, I'm going to be humble, I'm going to be persistent in faith, and that's exactly what happened. Her salvation came on that day through Jesus. In the week to come, this is the practical implication. In the week to come, let us all try to observe what is right, do what is just, even if it is the hardest thing to do. If we do this, God and God's salvation will come to us in a new way. Secondly, I said earlier that both Jesus and the woman cross each other's cultural boundaries. Now, they could have let the prejudice of the time dictate their actions and interaction with each other. But what was at stake? What was at stake was the healing of a young girl. If the woman had left insulted and not stayed with Jesus, the healing would have never taken place. And if Jesus had been stubborn, and if he did not give to what he called the dogs, the food kept for the children, if he didn't do that, salvation wouldn't take place. But both of them had the courage to break each other's cultural barriers so that salvation happens, healing happens, deliverance happens, there is freedom. I guess what I want to say is, history shows us that people have used religion to oppress and dominate. We use the Bible to justify slavery. We use the Bible to justify the subjugation of women. The Bible or religious books are used even today to talk about one religion over another. We still do this. And I guess today God is saying to us, our prejudices have tremendous power. They have the power to restrict God's word from acting freely. If we can find within ourselves the courage to break barriers, and why should there be an east side and a west side, a north and a south? Why? If we could break barriers, the possibility of God's word becoming a means for freedom, for deliverance, and for healing. But like Jesus and the woman, we must have the courage to do this. Now, my third point is something totally unrelated to today's gospel, to the readings. However, I do want to begin with the reading from Isaiah. Isaiah's reading ends with the words, "My house shall become a house of prayer." My dear friends, in this parish we have the tradition of a parish retreat every year. We call it our discipleship retreat. Just last Friday, I sent an invitation to every parishioner in this parish to participate in what we call our parish discipleship retreat. 2 years back, our theme was radical discipleship. This year, our theme is faithful discipleship. In other words, each one of us, individually and as a community, we're trying in this parish to live the following of Christ, to think, to talk, and to act like Jesus to the best of our ability. We fail, we're not perfect, but we're trying. We have a vision, we have a goal. Starting September this year, we're going to call that entire till next September the year of prayerful discipleship. This community, we want to focus a whole year on prayer. Both our individual lives becoming more prayerful, and as a community making our worship a time of deep experience of God. And so you've received an invitation. If not, you will receive it on Monday. There is an invitation letter and an RSVP card. May I please ask you to read that letter and to make a very serious decision to be part of this retreat. Last year we had 320 people at that retreat. We hope to have many more this year. But listen, we must, because God says, my house shall be a house of prayer for all peoples. We must figure out a way to become an even more prayerful community than we already are. If you haven't received an invitation, it's because you're not on our database yet. Please, may I ask you to consider your participation in this. I think it's the most meaningful thing we will do as a parish community the whole of the year. May we become a community of prayerful, faithful, radical disciples of Jesus. So I want to end the homily today with the prayer that I prayed for you right at the beginning of Mass.